You're listening to a Hindustan Times podcast brought to you by HT Smartcast.
Hi, this is Manjula Narayan, National Books Editor, Hindustan Times, and this is the Books and Authors podcast. It's a weekly podcast where I speak to authors who've got a new book out. Hi, so today we have with us Meera Manik, who's written The Book of Chai, History, Stories, and More Than 60 Recipes. Hi, Meera.
Hi, so great to be on your podcast. Thank you.
Yeah, so you know, Meera, I mean, what I loved about the book is actually the recipes. You know, they're so unusual in the sense that, I mean, I never thought of cooking with chai, though. Of course, we cook chai, but, you know, or baking with chai, you know, all those ideas. And it's given me so many ideas of things that I could do. I don't know whether I'd get around to doing it, but, you know. So tell me, let's start with, why did you write this book?
Before you say that, I'm going to say to you that the recipes in the book are very simple. So if you think you won't get around to doing it, just think it's not going to take me very long because I've made them very, very easy.
You have actually, you know. So
oh, good.
Yeah.
So, why did I write the book? Well, so each of my books, I've written three books, and each of them have been very, very different to the previous one. And I haven't followed the trajectory of cookbook after cookbook after cookbook. My first was a cookbook with, you know, wrapped up with some stories. And the second was a book on Ayurveda. And the third happens to be a book on chai. And each one has never really been as such planned. It's not like I knew that I was going to write a book on Ayurveda and rituals and happiness. And same with chai. And when I was figuring out my third book, I was writing drafts and proposals for nutrition books. And okay. I literally wrote one or two, you know, very lengthy proposals for a nutrition book, practically wrote half the book. I don't know how or why or when, but it popped into my head. I was like, why not a book on chai, like a sort of coffee table book? And even though the book that has come into existence is not necessarily coffee table book, it's more of a reading book, which I actually love. That was not the original idea, but I love how each book of mine has sort of evolved into its own being rather than me dictating from the very beginning exactly what I want it to be. In a way, it's nicer to know because then you're planning it very well. However, each of the books has taken its own form after I've like thrashed out all the ideas on paper or laptop and then come up with a succinct format with my agent. So it was really just the fact that I've always loved spices and I've always loved my masala chai, and I've always felt like chai is such a strong ritual for me. And also because my brand is actually based around chai and spices, and more so spices actually. So my whole brand with Chai by Meera is spice blends, which you can put into tea, into milk, into coffee, into anything. And really that begins with understanding and loving the spices for their healing benefits, digestion benefits, and also because they add immense flavor to anything and everything.
You know, when I was reading your book, I was wondering, because, you know, we are so used to having chai with spices. And I was wondering, I mean, the British don't, you know, usually drink it like that. So was it easy to kind of, I mean, I know now chai is popular and, you know, all that. But was it easy to sell this idea that you can use cardamom, you can use ginger? You know, I mean, isn't it kind of different for them?
You know, the whole phenomenon of chai latte has become so like such a popular thing in the West, whether it's Britain or America, and any cafe you go to now has a chai latte. Now, I'm not saying chai latte is typical of it or anything like masala chai, because it's very milky and lacks the tea element. It lacks strength as such, or garak.
Yes, yes.
Not garak. It's more milky and sweet. But what people identify as chai now, forget the tea, they identify the chai as a spicier form or sweeter and spicier form of tea. So weirdly, the concept of, and it really is weird because the word chai only means tea, but if you ask the average person, including me about 2 years ago or whenever before I even started writing the book, I always thought of chai as the Indian version of tea, but chai actually only means tea, and it comes from China, and the word itself is not even an Indian word, which is fascinating. Like, I had no idea, and I think many of us don't, because it seems like such a globally Indian known product, but actually it's the masala addition that makes it Indian, not necessarily the tea itself, even though the tea is obviously grown in India, and it was always growing in India. It wasn't necessarily discovered, nor was it being drunk, nor was it an actual Indian thing that they were mass producing in India years ago. Yes. And I mean, not really years ago, we're actually talking quite recent times.
Yes, early 20th century, really.
Nope. Yeah, bizarre, right? Like, you would just wouldn't think that. So that's the part where I was like, when I started writing the book, I think you must have seen some of the stories in there. That's the part I started writing first. So the stories, literally, I smashed them out immediately, because that's what comes to me naturally. Story writing, storytelling, creative writing, all of that is sort of more my background. And so that came really naturally. And I loved writing those stories, so much so that I actually went back to my editor. I was like, should we just change the whole book into a storybook? Because I was just, they were just coming out so like fluently and with no actual effort. Although there was effort, because if you think of their stories, they're actually very short stories. But what I've done is I've given extra context, and in order to give that extra context, I had to do a lot of research, whether it's like, you know, the chai in that area, or the area that I'm talking about with the reason, sort of the background of that area. So, for example, Marine Drive and the buildings in the Marine Drive, you know, the whole Art Deco concept, or going to Rishikesh and giving some background knowledge on that, or Varanasi, and similarly in Gujarat. So all these things, providing context to all these stories, was really important. And then secondary was the history. But second, when I say secondary, even though that's the first thing that starts the book, that was the most researched for me. Like, I did so much research for that. It took a lot of like effort and time to figure all that out. And it's just truly like opened up a whole world of fascination to me, because I think, like me, there's probably a lot of other people who didn't know this, all of this, that it was the British addiction to tea that really led to the way we drink tea now.
Yes, yes. And what I found really nice about the book was also your family history, you know, and your grandmother's whole, you know, move from Gujarat to Africa and then to the UK, and, you know, how it kind of, it's a picture of migrations in the 20th century, right? Of Indian migrations in the 20th century, some Indian migrations at least. So, you know, talk about that. I found that lovely.
Yeah, I really thought, for me, I wanted to encapsulate and almost, you know, record these stories that might get lost at some point. And there's so many, even though I know these stories, there's so many details that you, unless you really delve into, like, you ask 100 questions, you're not going to get these answers. And so I really sat down with my grandmother, and that's sort of what I wanted to do. And chai actually became a vehicle to do that. So even though I focus on the chai a little bit in those stories, that is not really the primary focus. So but it is interesting, because, you know, tying in my grandmother's telling the story of her nanny making chai in the village in Gujarat, tying that in with the history of tea and when tea was popularized in India was also really interesting, because you're like, oh, so that's when, how did tea by that point get to the villages? Because it was only starting to be popularized, you know, say a decade before that or less. So that was really interesting. And I think it was more just, chai was sort of the vehicle, but chai was also the primary focus in terms of, so what are my grandma's memories of how her nanny made chai? But beyond that, how did they get that milk? You know, where did that milk come from? Was it their own cows, or was it the village cows? And so that, I go into detail about that. And then obviously, what did her day consist of when she woke up in the village? You know, because that, I've been to that village, and I think seeing or imagining that life that once was, how 90 years ago or whatever, 85 years ago, it's just, for me, it's like trying to imagine this world come to life. And the way she explains is so interesting every time I ask her. So, you know, before all of that disappears, I wanted to encapsulate some of these memories. And obviously then she talks about how she went from there to Africa to London, and how, you know, I speak about how chai has obviously remained a constant, as has so many other things, but you know, how you start your day, the ritual with which you start the day. But chai is really just an example there of how these rituals, traditions, culture, food, language, fashion, all these things remained a constant. And so actually, while India might have moved on, in a sense, we haven't. We're still in many ways living in a very ancient time, in some specific ways. There are things that we've held on to, which we may have let go of if we were still in India, but because we've moved from one country to the other, they've remained the things that we hold on to, and they've not really changed.
Mm-hmm. And I also loved how, you know, when you write about how, you know, her relationship with her grandmother, and, you know, one tends to think of, I don't know, women in earlier generations as being very oppressed and not showing love, or, you know, whatever, you know, that sort of thing, or that the girl child was ignored. These are maybe they're cliches, but this is how people generally think things were earlier. But then you brought out this close relationship and how your grandmother was so loved, and her uncles coming all the way to give that pair of anklets, and it's lovely, you know, and it kind of changes the way you view the past. So was that something you were thinking of?
Yeah, so lovely that you pick on that and you choose to draw on that, because that's one of my favorite stories. And I think even though the way you put it is not necessarily what I had initially thought of, it's so interesting that you spin it like that, because that's actually very true and not something I've necessarily thought of. I think it's more, for me, it was just the fact that I find it so interesting that her own mother left her there in this village while she went back to Mombasa, because she couldn't cope with, you know, taking two children back. And yes. My grandmother was a little baby who then was brought up by her nanny and was so loved by her nanny. And yes, part of that is the story of, like, and then how her mum comes back and she doesn't go back with her because she refuses, because she loves living. She takes her own nanny to be her own mother and all of that stuff. And I find that was so interesting. But also, you're right, there is this sense of, I don't once hear about, oh, this person treated me badly, or I didn't feel at home here, or this literally was her home. And there are elements of that really surprised me too, because I'm like, oh, there's literally no one who's taken advantage of her, like, in all that time. Or, like, you know, not taken advantage, but, like, I don't know, hit her.
Treated her badly
or anything. There's no mention of that. And, you know, I've asked her about it so many times, where not once has she come up with that. You know, everyone in that village treated her like an absolute queen. And it was that obviously she took with her. And even now you see elements of that coming out, because even though she's been through a lot of hardship in her life, essentially she's always been that young girl who's been treated like a queen. And now when you see her, she is treated like a queen.
Okay.
So yeah. You do see elements of that even now. Like, you see that sort of sense of, you know, feeling like almost majestic, or, like, you know, just being the center of attention with all her friends or whatever it is, you see that coming through.
Yeah, it's nice. So, and also, you know, some of the recipes, you know, I liked all the recipes, though. I mean, I don't particularly like cardamom, so, you know, I always avoid, but I did love what you've done. Some of these unexpected things, like baking with masala chai cake. I love this recipe. Do you want to talk about it? I've never thought of this. I really never. I mean, you know.
So did you just say you don't like cardamom?
I hate cardamom.
Oh my god, I love cardamom. It's like one of my favorite things.
Yeah, I love adrak chai. Oh. You know, like, whenever masala chai is being made, I say, please don't put cardamom in it. So
that's so funny. What would you say are the key spices in India? For, like, if you were to come up with the, you know, two key spices, what would they be for, like, Indian chai?
I think it's turmeric and adrak, ginger.
Turmeric? But turmeric isn't in masala chai generally, right?
No, turmeric isn't in masala. I mean, I wasn't like thinking of masala chai specifically, but
Sorry, yeah.
I always opt for adrak. So ginger is
Adrak,
my,
yeah. Ginger is the go-to, yeah, that's
bay
what I
leaf is
think.
also nice. I mean, the bay leaf recipe is also nice. Tej
Yeah.
patta.
So the reason I mentioned this is because actually when you think about the way West considers masala chai and what is the most prominent thing, you'll ask anyone and everyone will come up with one answer and that'll be cinnamon. The ginger and all of that, they don't even know about. Like most people who think chai latte, they think cinnamon. Because if you go to these very, very, big chains where you get chai latte, it's a very, very sweet but cinnamony sweet type of drink. It's not as much spice as it is the sweet spice. So that's why people immediately think, oh, cinnamon is the most prominent spice. And actually, it's not. That's like the third or fourth spice that people in India sort of focus on. And even in my spice blend, it's the third. Yeah, third one. Anyway, so yes, masala chai cake. It is one of it's, oh my God, that is a delicious recipe. And also, there's the apple sort of. There's an apple sort of, what is it? Apple crumble cake, which is delicious. Yeah, I mean, the idea of that was that basically, like, if you think about,
Spiced apple crumble.
yeah, if you think about like cakes, when you actually spice up cakes, they taste amazing. So then, why not put the whole concoction in with tea and everything? And you often get coffee and walnut cake, or I don't know, you get those sorts of cakes. And actually, masala chai cake, like, it just makes so much sense. So it did come up, it did actually take a while to come up with the, what do you call it, the actual recipe.
Thanks.
But yeah, it did take a little, I think it took a couple of, that particular recipe took a couple of goes to come up with the right version. But eventually we managed it. And eventually I managed it even. But it is really delicious. And actually, if you think about any cake, if you just take your favorite cake and you put a masala chai mix, it would work. But it's just different ways of doing it. Like I thought, oh, why, maybe there could be an icing version where the icing has masala chai in it. But that would just be long. I really wanted to come up with the recipes that are really not tricky to make. Like they're quite simple to action, simple to bake. And I'm just one of those people who wants everything simplified. So when I wrote the recipes for this book, I try to do it as simple as possible. So that was the idea, just coming up with the ways in which to include spices in anything and everything. And obviously, you might have seen that I've got breakfast recipes like overnight oats or porridge with chai spices or chia pudding with certain spices. And really, the idea with all these things is to show people that actually use spices in anything and everything, not just when you're cooking Indian food, because number one, they will flavor your food and taste delicious. And number two, every single spice has an immense wealth of benefits. So why not sprinkle them on everything? So when you're making your porridge, you can do cinnamon. Most people do cinnamon, but maybe add some turmeric or add some ginger. And by doing this on a daily basis, you will just naturally and instinctively start using more spice in your daily cuisine.
And
So
you
that,
know,
yeah, so that was the idea. And there's so, and I think, my whole background, it comes from studying, and my second book, studying Ayurveda, and my second book is all about sort of rituals for happiness, but also focused or based on Ayurvedic principles. And one of the key Ayurvedic principles is, and for gut health, is cooking with spices, drinking spices, healing your body with spices, and promoting longevity through spices.
Though I mean, you mentioned kashayam somewhere, and I remember
Yes.
my childhood, people stuffing kashayam down my throat, and I was thinking,
My God,
bleh.
it's
Of
so
course,
delicious.
healthy,
Although, to be honest, kashayam is something I didn't know. The word that word I didn't know. We call it in the book. I've called it gadha, and in the South Indian, it's only my friend who told me that in South India they call it kashayam. There's a different word for it.
This is specific. It's I think it's an Ayurvedic word, right? Kashayam. So
Yeah.
anyway, so kashayam, let kashayam be. But what I like about your book really is that, because it's the sort of insider outsider insider perspective, you know. So as an Indian,
Ah, I've not thought of that. Yeah,
as
it truly, because I grew up with the outsider perspective, even though I grew up in an insider family, and then I figured out the insider element by studying this book or by writing this book, sorry.
That's what
Yeah,
struck me. So
sorry.
you've taken things like, I mean, an Indian from India would never come up with this idea, you know. And it's a lovely idea, Paleji and coconut cheesecake, fantastic, you know. I mean, we think of Paleji, we feed it to the street dogs and all, or you know, we eat it in childhood, it's just there all the time, Paleji. You don't really think much of it, but then you've like done this, and I mean, seriously, it's a lovely idea. So you want to talk about this?
Oh gosh, yes. I just thought, you know what? Parle-G is such a celebrated product. And when I did the research for this book, I realized the interesting history about Parle-G, because obviously there is a lot of context and history. And then I was like, well, you know, we should, rather than just saying, oh, have Parle-G biscuits with your chai, why not figure out a couple of recipes with Parle-G? So I was like, well, what would taste good? You know, like if it's a biscuit, you know, and if you think about the way biscuits are used in recipes, one of them is by using them as a base of a cheesecake. So that's sort of the idea. I was like, well, rather than celebrating Parle-G by just saying dunk your Parle-G in chai, here's a new way of using Parle-G. So while my whole background and what I focus on even now is like healthy living and healthy food and, you know, not too much processed sugar and all of that, all of those good things. I was like, well, in this book, I can't just put only healthy recipes because this book is a celebration about all things chai. And, but I have put my own spin on things. So, for example, the Bombay sandwich, you know, I've put my own spin on it by adding sweet potato mashed with lots of spices rather than slices of normal potato. Now, that's not to say that potato, white potato, is bad for you. It's just because I genuinely love sweet potato and I love the flavor it gives. But it also happens to be healthier. So, you know, and the bhajia, what do you call it? The palak fritters. I've done them in a very different way rather than deep frying them. I've shallow fried them because I genuinely don't know. I genuinely never deep fry anything. So this is just a different way of
Never,
doing it.
ever, never, ever deep fry anything.
No, I don't think I've ever fried anything in my life. I've
Wow.
eaten fried food. Like if someone's making something, you know, I've eaten it, but I rarely eat fried food. And we're talking, I'll eat fried food once a month, if that, like the odd thing, but I don't eat any fried food. So yes, I just don't know much about frying, and I was like, well, why not? Rather than trying to figure out how to fry food, and also, frankly, there are other ways of doing it. Let me see if there are other ways of doing it, and that's how I came up with the, you know, shallow frying. And yes, it's maybe not as crispy, but you know, if anyone really wants to make the original recipe, they can easily make it. But I wanted to come up with a slightly different version, which is healthier. And you know, when it comes to Parle-G biscuits, it's an indulgent thing. So you know there are desserts that are more indulgent in this book, which I wanted to put in for a reason. And also, you're not ever really going to be able to make Parle-G any healthier than it is. It is what it is. It's a biscuit.
It's a taste
It's
of
funny. It's
childhood.
quite a cult. It's quite a cult, isn't it, Parle-G?
It's the taste of childhood for us, you know, basically. Like when you're a baby, you're given Paleji, you know. So it kind of sticks with
As is similarly to Maggie, right?
Yes. Oh, yeah. It's comfort
Funny,
food.
Maggie is such a cult, and I wrote about Maggie in the book as well because I wrote about, quite a lot about Maggie actually. But obviously, it's one of the worst things you can eat on a daily basis. But funnily enough, when I did my research, because I was like, oh, let me research Maggie, even though because I was mentioning it in one of my stories, and I was like, oh my God, it's weird because the reason why people are so nostalgic about it in India is because they were given given Maggie noodles in their lunch boxes for school.
Yeah, we had it as a treat also sometimes, you know, like it's raining, let's have Maggie.
Yeah, okay.
You know, so it's connected with all those things and holidays in the hills, you know, you have Maggie. So it's all that nostalgia that kind of feeds into it.
Yeah,
It's not
and then
healthy,
there's
but
100 different iterations and ways of making it.
So yeah, so and then and these are of course general favorites, kesar doodh, you know, saffron, and these are like nice. I mean, we know the, you know, maybe Indians.
Yeah, and I needed to include some of the more traditional things, because I think when it comes to this book, it needs to appeal to everyone. So, yes, you know, there are the more experimental recipes that people would have been like, oh, I never thought of that. And then there's the more traditional things, because you want to cover all the regional ways of making chai and all the different ways of making spices and milk as well. And I wanted to include the spice in milk section, even though the book is called Book of Chai, because I want people to know that, you know, you can use any spices. It doesn't just have to be like the turmeric milk is important, because, you know, we all grew up drinking that, even though it doesn't contain tea itself. And actually, the history of drinking spices is older and more beneficial, I guess, than the history of drinking tea, which is much more recent. As to when the marriage of those two happened, that's sort of lost in history somewhere. But actually, drinking spices in hot water is, or hot milk and hot water, is such an important part of our history, because it comes from the Ayurveda.
Yes. So now all these things, I mean, for a Western reader, how have they been reacting to this, you know? I mean, when I read the book, yeah, I know, wow, these are nice ideas. And, you know, there are some ideas which I'd never have thought about. But is it completely new to them or what? How has the reaction been?
So far, it's only been like, what, a month and a half. I've had quite a few people messaging and saying that they've read parts of the book, but it's still too early to say, you know, this is the reaction. I think generally people just find it fascinating that, firstly, the history is so interesting, and a lot of people didn't know about that. And I'd been doing a lot of events, and in the launch of the book, I did quite a few events in the space of the first 3 weeks, and those were a lot, you know, attended by mostly the British, I guess. I'm doing them in London, and not always Indians. It was quite a good mix, and I think everyone just found it really fascinating. Firstly, that, you know, chai isn't necessarily an Indian phenomenon from eons ago, which is what people think it is. And secondly, while they're listening to me speaking, I'm always giving cups of chai from my brand or different ways of making chai, or I'm doing a demonstration. And again, people are like so fascinated by how spices can be so healing and beneficial to the body, because I always thought people knew this, but most people don't actually know that each and every spice is beneficial and healing and so good for digestion. Forget all of that. They just don't even know that spices are necessarily good for you. So going into that is really interesting, because for me, that's a really important key thing in relaying that message. And then thirdly, people don't really know what to expect when they open the book, and are very pleasantly, well, not that they wouldn't be surprised in a good way, but they are really pleasantly surprised, because they don't really know what to expect. You know, what will a chai book have? And the stories are always something that people are like, oh, I didn't realize there'd be so many like wonderful stories in here. So I think that's the part where, in a way, when I think about rewriting the book, or I wish I'd done it this way, I think I wish I'd kept maybe two more stories, because they're already a third of the book, but I wish they'd come in slightly earlier, because the history section obviously takes over, because that takes such a long time to relay. And then the stories come into play. And I just love the stories so much. So I do hope that whoever picks up the book gets to those points, because once you get into the stories, it really feels like a real storybook. People, I think what you said, the points you've picked up on are the points that people generally pick up on with my book. But there's so many different things, like the interviews I've had with, you know, newspapers and press is very similar, where they feel like there's so many different elements to cover, because there's the recipes, there's the sort of ways of using spices and food and drink, there's the history element, there's the cultural element, there's obviously the stories. There's so much in the book. So yeah, I think there's a lot of depth in the book, but at the same time, it's not difficult to read.
Yes, that's true. That's true. And also, you know, apart from spices, the way, you know, you're talking about sweeteners, you know, you can add honey, or you can add, apart from sugar. And, you know, I just made a mark there, because I've shifted to coconut sugar, you know. So, and there are so many, and jaggery, of course, we have jaggery. Only in the winter, because it's too hot now to have jaggery. So I like that you brought out the bits about sweeteners as well, you know. So I mean, generally in the UK, do they take it with sugar ever or?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they do. I think tea itself, it's like whether people add sugar or not is up to them. But when it comes to chai latte, it's already sweetened. And you mentioned coconut sugar. My brand, the Chai by Mira brand, all of our chai spice blends are with coconut sugar. So think of it like
Oh.
something you can sprinkle on something. So say, for example, you were making porridge and you can just sprinkle it on there. If
Yes.
you're making milk, you just put it in there and boil it. Like it's a very, very, there's a lot of coconut sugar in there, but essentially, yeah, it has that. It's not only healthier for you, but it also has a lovely flavor and adds to the flavor of the spice blend. People do think of chai latte here as a very sweet drink. They don't think of it as just spices. And wherever you go in the UK, if you're having a chai latte, I don't think I've ever had it where it's not sweetened, already sweetened. There are brands that do it with just the tea and the spices, and then you have to make that. But when you go to a cafe, you generally get this sweet version, which is just dissolves into milk or water. So yeah, I mean, I think tea, as whether they add sugar or not is up to them. But chai latte, it's already mostly 95% of the time, it's already sweetened, and people just expect that. I think the other thing I would say is that in the West, and what I've seen is that people's palates are getting more accustomed to spice. So the spice that there are more chai brands coming about, there are more chai spice brands coming about, and a lot of the blends are getting more richer in spice because people's palates are getting, and also the fact that there are so many cafes that are now using my chai spice shows that. Because mine's a spicier blend. It's a much spicier blend than what I've ever tasted out there. So when people try it and they like it, that goes to show that people are getting a lot more used to spice, and they actually like a spicier and a more richer flavor. Even though mine doesn't contain tea, it's really spice heavy, where you really do get that kick at the back of your throat because there's black pepper, white pepper, ginger, as well as all the other spices. So people really, really are starting to like that. And I've hardly ever had someone coming back and saying, this is too spicy. People are like, oh my God, I love the fact that yours has more spice, which goes to show that everyone's palate's changed a little bit.
And this bit, as globalization continues to bring cultures and customs closer together, khara is increasingly becoming a popular drink beyond India's borders. Really?
Sorry,
Really?
gada, you said.
Yeah.
Everything
Khara
right? Okay.
tea. Yeah.
I think, which is that from the section about Qatar?
It's about a brief history of tea, I think, 49.
Okay,
At
fine.
the
Yeah,
very end,
I
is
do.
it?
I mean, I think the whole idea of adding spices and hot water and hot milk is becoming so much more popular. Like there are people who will never have tea who will be having chai latte. Now, chai latte does sound like a very milky version or very
Yes.
lukewarm. And I say that in terms of spices, lukewarm version of what you'd find in India, what you'd make at home. But a lot of these brands are spicy, and so actually, people are starting to have more chai or more spices in their tea. And there are so many people I know who will hardly have a cup of tea, and they'll have more coffee, but they'll have the chai latte. So it is becoming a lot like. And when I say popular, like it, before, it was just the Starbucks or the independents that would have the chai. Now it's restaurants, it's brunch places, it's hotels. I do supply to some hotels as well. We're talking about some of the top high-end hotels in London and the UK and other places. So, and Europe, I've started working with cafes in Barcelona as well. And actually, chai latte is becoming more and more and more popular. Every sort of high-end independent cafe I went to recently in Spain, Portugal, they all had chai latte or some version of chai. And I mean the spicy version. And I don't think that would have been the case 3 or even 5 years ago. So it has really increased because globalization means that more people are coming. I mean, obviously, there's more young people coming here, more people going from here to there. And people ask for these things on the menu because they're starting to like chai over coffee, or want an alternative to coffee. So it's not that people necessarily like chai over coffee. It's more that they want the coffee alternative to be there. And one of the key coffee alternatives is matcha, and the other one is chai. So it's not the English breakfast tea, it is the chai.
Okay. So talk about this lovely recipe, chai fudge. You know, there's so many things I look at in this book and think, I'm going to make it. You know, I hope I get it.
The chai fudge is a very, very interesting and delicious recipe. And it's obviously naturally gluten-free. And I think that's the one thing that I want to celebrate about Indian flours, such as the, well, from millets to the gram flour, the besan. And the reason why I wanted to write this is because, you know, people think of wheat and then the gluten-free version, but there are so many natural grains in India that happen to be gluten-free anyway, and they're delicious regardless, and they're high in protein. So besan is one of them. And while this recipe has coconut oil and it has dates, obviously it's a natural sweeter, a better version of sugar. Obviously, you can't have it in big amounts, but it goes to show that you can make things. And Indians have always been making things with all these different flours,
yes,
as desserts or even as savory things. So in the book, I think I've also used besan in another way by mixing it into a fritter recipe, because, you know, you can make the chillas or the pudlas that us Gujaratis called them, that I grew up eating, or you can make it into a dessert form like this lovely barfi, which I called fudge. And the reason I called it fudge is because even though it's sort of a besan barfi in a way, the fudge element is because when I first came up with the recipe many years ago and I wanted to make it as a product, which I did, lots of people who I gave it to said, oh, it tastes really fudge-like. And that's how I came up with the fudge recipe. And it was called until, it was called as a product, I've still got the branding, it was called Cocoa Fudge. Coconut meaning cocoa from the coconut. And it's called COCO Fudge. Now, it tastes very fudge-like. It also tastes like peanut butter, and it's actually got no nuts in it at all. So it's a really, really lovely recipe. And I would highly recommend, like, you know, make some version of that at some point. You can add whatever spices you like. In the book, obviously, I've got various spices, chai blend, chai spices. But you can actually make it with whatever spices you like. And it's delicious. So, yeah.
So tell me, you know, with these recipes, what was the process? Like, you know, suppose an idea strikes you. I mean, all the traditional recipes, I know, you know, we watch our mothers or our grandmothers or aunts or whatever, and we know the recipe. But something like this, you know, a lot of the fusion ideas that you've come up with, how did you, what did you do? What was the process? Like, you experimented, what did you do?
I didn't experiment that much, to be honest. I just came up with them in my mind and I thought, oh, that would taste good, or I should do this, like just literally adding spices to things. And I think I've always done that, like whether I'm making overnight oats, a porridge, a smoothie, or a chai, or a hot milk, or anything, I always, or even the snacks that go with chai. The snacks that go with chai probably did require a bit more research, because those are the savory things that I'm not necessarily sprinkling spices on or anything. So the savory things are more, I wanted to depict some of the traditional things, whether it's a chili cheese toast, or I mean, not that that's super traditional, but, you know, that's one of the people think of that as a very good pairing with chai. And also my own versions of things, for which I did need a little bit more research, just because I was like, well, what would I put in the book? And I wanted to put a good combination of my own personal things, whether it's like the corn cakes, the corn fritters, and the pudlas, or the more traditional stuff, which is what I just said. Whereas the sweet stuff, I think I've always had a love for certain breakfast dishes with spices. And so I just came up with versions of them. So while I could say, oh, the overnight oats, which are blended, you could add turmeric or saffron or cinnamon or cardamom or any of those things, let me just come up with a golden version of them this time. So it was more just some of them, it was just like, oh, this would taste good. And when I made it, it tasted good. And some of them, it was more a case of seeing which spice tasted better. And yes, I think when it came to experimenting, there were certain recipes I needed to make again and again because they didn't quite work. And I thought it was important to have them in the book, such as, I think the Parleji cheesecake didn't just naturally, we didn't naturally just come together. I then sort of made it again. And then there was the masala chai cake. I didn't quite get the concoction right. It didn't taste spicy enough. So again, I had to make that one again. So there were some that I had to make again, but most of them really did just naturally fall into place quickly. And it was more a case of just showing the variety and the diversity of ways in which to use the spices and spicy and savory things you can have with chai. And of course, the regional chais, which required a fair amount of research, because obviously I needed to come up with enough. I wanted to cover all the regional recipes, and I hope I have covered a lot of them, if not all of them, from most regions in India. And I just found it fascinating that they vary so much region to region.
Yes, yes, yeah. And also, when I was reading the book, I was thinking it's not just chai lovers, but like you mentioned, I mean, you know, vegans have a lot to take from this book, right? I mean, you know, were you thinking about that when you were doing it, or it just happened?
I think it just happened. And I think most of my food does lend itself well to vegans. Especially my first book, my cookbook, Saffron Soul. Well, all my books, because Saffron Soul is obviously a cookbook, and I would say 95% of the recipes are vegan, or more, because the ones that are vegetarian, I'm just using yogurt in, and you can always swap that. So yes. I rarely use milk anyway, and that's why I think and that's where I wanted to show people that actually these things can completely be vegan. But I also don't want to section it off as a vegan book or just focusing on vegan, because I want it to appeal to everyone. And yes. And I think, yeah, most of the recipes do work as vegan recipes. And also, I myself am vegetarian, so I would never put meat in my book regardless. Because I don't even know how to cook with it. I've never cooked with it in my life. So, most of the recipes do work as vegan recipes and as healthy recipes. Like I said, you know, the gluten-free factor, because I've used so much besan and all these other things just to show that you can use natural great grains, and they just don't need to be having gluten in them. It does lend itself well to vegans. And I hope that covers your question.
Okay. And one last question. Are you working on something else now, or are you taking a break after this book? You just
concentrate? The book's just come out. I'm really trying to get it out there. I am doing various interviews and that sort of thing, but my main business is my chai spice business, so I'm really growing that at the moment and focusing on expanding that beyond the UK borders, but also in the UK. I mean, there's just immense, there's so many cafes and restaurants that I could be working with, and we are really trying to grow that. We're trying to grow the brand and take it to other places as well. So for now, I'm just focusing on expanding that business. And obviously the book goes very hand in hand with the business as well. So promoting the book naturally, you know, is part and parcel of that as well. But equally, I do want to make sure this book really gets out then. And every time I do a book, I don't ever know what my next one's going to be. It has happened just by the process of organically it's come about. And I don't know what my next one would be, but I think each book has its own niche. However, there is a thread of Indian flavors running through the book. There's a thread of Ayurveda and sort of grounding rituals, as well as happiness, finding your own happiness that runs through the book. Maybe my next one would be on wellness and you know, health more specifically. I don't actually know right now. But that said, I've written two novels before I wrote any of these books. They're not published. And so I do love writing creatively. And who knows, maybe I haven't had that novel in me still.
You do, because, you know, the stories that are in the book, they're very nice, you know. So, I mean, maybe you should dust those novels, get them out there.
Yeah, I do. I really do love story writing. And I think that's what really comes naturally to me.
Okay, great. Okay, and on that note, for everybody listening, go out and get The Book of Chai by Meera Manik. History, stories, and more than 60 recipes. Lovely recipes, and history and stories are very nice too. So thank you so much, Meera, for talking to me.
Thank you. It was so wonderful speaking to you. And I hope we covered lots of ground, and anyone who listens to this gets lots of nuggets of health information, food stories, culture, everything from it.
Okay, great. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you.
To stay updated on this podcast, follow us at HD Smartcast on all the major social media platforms. To listen to more such podcasts, log on to www.hdsmartcast.com.